Beets are a great source of nitric oxide, and you can get the benefits of three whole beets in just one teaspoon of Super Beets without the beet taste. No fuss, no muss. It's a great way to get your nitric oxide in your bloodstream elevated. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. That's 800-738-2198. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we rejoin Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin for our weekly answering of your questions. Your questions can be sent to radioprogram@aol.com, and we reserve the right to answer the questions that are suitable and relevant. And if you have a very acute medical dilemma or nutritional issue that's very complicated,
go see your doctor.
Go see your doctor, or you know, come see us for a more a less abbreviated answer, because some questions cannot be answered via this medium. However, we've got many good questions this week, and we're going to start with a question about a DVT.
Yes.
What's the question?
Sherry writes, "I was just diagnosed with a DVT in my lower calf after a long haul flight, and I'm very much opposed to taking blood thinners. Could you please tell me your opinion on this and what alternative? I've started taking Nattovena and Seracor, but my GP doesn't support my decisions." So she's taking serapepsidases, she's taking Natto, but
that's not going to do it because
she has a DVT.
Yeah, DVT.
That's an emergency.
Yeah, it can migrate to the via the superior vena cava right in the lungs.
Ooh.
And it can cause death. So this is something where you really do have to take blood thinners. And yes, you know, there are natural blood thinners, vitamin E, fish oil, mm-hmm. Nattokinase, seropeptidase, ginkgo, garlic, fish oil. But, you know, you're taking a chance. You're taking a chance because you may not sufficiently anticoagulate. So you need to take some kind of medical blood thinner. And look, you might dodge a bullet, you know, but you might not.
But you might not. I wouldn't take that chance.
Right.
If I were Sherry.
Yeah.
No.
DVT is a serious problem. No. So, and the date of that question is?
Is August 6th.
Okay, so it's been
it's been 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks.
But so, again, this is not the place to write your emergency.
Exactly. You know, kind of illustrates the problem.
Right.
Right. Right. So please don't await an answer from Q&A with Layla if you're subject to an acute medical situation. But nonetheless, we weighed in with our opinion.
Right, right. Best of luck to you, Sherry.
By the way, what I will say, though, is this does not mean that there's not natural treatment for DVTs. Mm-hmm. And I've actually had some cases where patients have had persistent DVTs and persistent pain and aching and swelling mm-hmm. in their leg. I remember one patient who came to see me all the way from Washington, D.C. area, mm-hmm. and she had a persistent DVT, and we treated her with proteolytic enzymes, Wobenzyme and serapeptidase,
yeah.
and we gave her fish oil, we changed her diet, we gave her vitamin E, and the right kind of program, and she is, to this day, it was like a miracle. The soreness went away. The swelling, the size of her legs
receded. Yeah.
I mean, it normalized. Mm-hmm. She had normal calf size, one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
and she's been a constant source of referrals ever since. You know, and speaks very highly of us for having alleviated this problem. Because the prospect for her was nothing we can do about it. You know, keep taking the blood thinners and. However, after a certain time, after DVTs subside, they'll step you down from a blood thinner to maybe just aspirin, you know.
Which is much better.
Yeah.
And I want to remind anybody, if you're on aspirin therapy, a lot of doctors forget to tell their patients this, you must take it on a full stomach. You don't want to take aspirin therapy on an empty stomach. I hear too often that, my doctor told me to take it at night. Or first thing in the morning. No, not before breakfast. You want to take it after breakfast. That's the way to take it, unless you want an ulcer down the road.
Right, and a very high percentage of people who take aspirin, even the low-dose aspirin, even
the
enteric-coated
baby aspirin,
still get gastrointestinal bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sometimes unavoidable.
All right. We have a question from Judy. Dear Dr. Hoffman, thank you for taking the time to write your online newsletters. They're informative and I enjoy reading them. I have a question about the salad and salmon diet. You state that unlimited amounts of legumes may be eaten. I make my own split pea soup, and I read that it has a glycemic index of around 66.
Is that true?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
No, but I don't think that's not plausible.
Unless, you know, it's very thoroughly broken down as a soup, it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder.
Because there's a fair amount of starch in...
Right,
instead of
just eating intact peas.
Yeah, it's actually not a legume, it's a pulse. Which is, a pulse is starchier inherently than like a kidney bean or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So there's less fiber possibly, and maybe it's more processed, so it's more bioavailable. And that would mean that it's about two-thirds as glycemic as sugar.
Right. Two-thirds glycemic as sugar, or somewhere in the area of bread.
Well, let me ask you this question, Layla.
Yeah.
If you wanted to put somebody on a very low-carbohydrate diet for weight loss purposes or diabetes purposes, would you tell them to have a split pea soup?
No.
Or probably would
at
tell
least them. Not in the beginning.
Right.
They're not having peas. They're not having potatoes or corn. And carrots will happen occasionally in the beginning.
Right.
But later we're able to bring those foods in because it's good to add more variety and more fiber. And as their numbers normalize and they lose weight and they feel better, their blood sugar is under control, they can have more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Judy wants to know, is this split pea soup going to raise my glucose too much? How could we know?
We don't know her. Because,
we don't know her,
for example,
exactly.
If I have split pea soup...
Yeah.
After a 25-mile bike ride, and I'm not genetically prone to diabetes, then it's not going to have a deleterious impact on my blood sugar.
Yeah.
However, if I'm an older sedentary individual with a strong propensity to diabetes, I have a waistline of 39 inches, So and a hemoglobin A1C of 6.2, then that's different.
That is different.
So we have to individualize these recommendations.
So, Judy, we don't know if it would raise your glucose levels per se because we don't know you. But don't add any croutons into that split pea soup,
I'll tell you one way to change that split pea soup.
Uh-huh.
And the way I have split pea soup is, it's got to have like a big dollop of butter. So I'm getting more fat.
Mm.
And plus it's going to have some either turkey chunks or ham chunks.
Yes, ham hock, please.
Yeah, ham. Yep. And that will actually change the delivery.
The glycemic load.
It will change the delivery of the starch that's in there. It will slow it because the fat slows transit.
Yeah.
And the protein sort of balances out the starch, and you would actually somewhat attenuate that.
Exactly.
The other thing is, rarely does one have a meal of just split pea soup. That might be a prelude to a meal,
mm-hmm.
a meal of maybe grilled chicken or fish or meat.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that would be less of a problem.
Exactly.
Now,
Judy writes also, I read that avocados can do the same thing. Avocados don't. Avocados would be low glycemic because of their fat content. Judy, I have to question where you're getting your information from. Please don't say the internet, although that's where everybody's getting
it. Truth. It's only, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true.
It's got to be true if it's on the internet. Avocados are low glycemic.
Isn't there like a supervisor of the internet who makes sure that everything on the internet is correct?
Wouldn't that be great?
Isn't that...
Yeah.
Didn't the government do that?
Yeah.
I thought
Among
that's what we were
things.
Paying our taxes for.
Right.
To get, just turn that thing on and you get truthful information.
Yeah. Okay. We have a good question from Andrew. Any thoughts on micronutrients that can assist with the reversal of vitiligo? I know that dairy and gluten breed inflammation. Already got that fairly well wrapped up, but I haven't heard much about what to add to a diet to assist with this. Maybe turmeric? What do you think?
No, I got to say that it's an autoimmune disease, and anything that we do to slow the progression of an autoimmune disease is going to slow its progression, mm-hmm. but it's not going to put pigment back into those hypopigmented areas.
Right.
There has been some talk of tyrosine, mm-hmm. but tyrosine is a building block for melanin. And but the problem with vitiligo is not lack of tyrosine, it's lack of melanin-producing cells in the skin. They're destroyed uh-huh. by the autoimmune condition. So you can, it seems to me that, you know, that's only theoretically a benefit. I don't think that that's going to help. And I really don't know if, I mean, one of the ways you can nutritionally sort of camouflage vitiligo is take a lot of carotenoids. You get a little bit of a yellowish pigment, or you can take astaxanthin, which will, you know, astaxanthin is used to make gray salmon. Farm salmon is gray, but when they feed it astaxanthin, it becomes a nice pink color. So, you know, if you take some astaxanthin, it's sort of like an internal tanner. It will, but it's going to make you look orange.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not going to be a natural
color. Like
eating
too many carrots or something.
I mean, the contrast between the orange and your natural skin color may not be as clashy as, mm-hmm. you know, a white hypopigmented patches versus your natural beige skin color.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't really believe in a natural approach for this. Mm. Fish oil, vitamin D for autoimmunity, yes, those could
getting
be beneficial.
Getting the autoimmunity under control.
And whether that's dietarily triggered, although it's a little hit or miss with vitiligo. I think there's potential in vitiligo for some kind of stem cells therapy or restoration of the melanin-producing cells. I think they're working on it.
Wow. That would be exciting.
And maybe there will be, you know, some sort of targeted therapy that mm-hmm. blocks the autoimmunity, but I would suspect that that might have other harmful effects on other processes in the body.
Wow.
I know they're working on it. It's a common condition, and it's very debilitating because it's a cosmetic condition, unless you're Michael Jackson, in which case it's desirable.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Mm. Right.
Andrew, best of luck, and thank you for your question. Stay off the gluten and dairy to prevent furthering of the autoimmune. Let's see here. We have a question from Jessica. My sister has low sodium and takes 2 sodium chloride tablets per day, 2 grams. She also restricts her water intake per her doctor's instructions. Are there any herbs or supplements for hyponatremia? Thank you so much.
Well, there's hyponatremia can be viewed as a kind of a mineral deficiency. Sodium is a mineral,
right.
And if your sodium is low, you take sodium.
Right.
So there are many types of hyponatremia, and it's really complicated. The understanding of electrolyte imbalances like hyper and hyponatremia, it's controlled by so many things. It's controlled by the kidneys. It's controlled by the anterior pituitary.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's, yes, the anterior pituitary, which has, you know, like has to do with fluid balance and so on. So hyponatremia is a what's called a differential diagnosis. In other words, you'll show up and you'll have a sodium that's too low on a blood test. Like, mm-hmm. say it's 125 instead of 135. And then the doctor has to say, gee, why is that? Do you drink too much? Are you over-drinking water? That's one reason.
Water intoxication.
Water intoxication, yes. And that can be dangerous. That actually has killed some marathon runners. They just drink water, and they've sweated out their sodium, and then they get brain swelling. It's very dangerous. Cerebral edema. But there are other metabolic reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, your doctor has gone through the possibilities and says, simply take a little more sodium. And I think that that's the proper solution.
Yeah.
Another way that you can do that, but you have to check with your doctor to raise your sodium, it's a natural way to raise your sodium, is with licorice. Licorice will cause sodium retention, and it will cause potassium loss. So you can actually retain more sodium with licorice, but I really would check with your doctor to see if that's desirable under these circumstances. I don't know that
it's not for everybody.
If you were a patient, I knew your full situation, this listener, I could tell them if licorice would be okay to use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, well, you don't have to be afraid to salt your food. Having nice salty bone broths or something, that's also
a good way
to get sodium.
And by the way, sodium treatment, you know, we talk about how bad it is, you know, sodium's bad, avoid salt. For some people, sodium, taking more salt is actually beneficial.
Yes.
Because what it does is it helps to stabilize blood pressure. There's some, you know, two ways you can go wrong with blood pressure. It can be too high, 90% of people. But about 10% of people have too low blood pressure. They feel weak and woozy.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to increase their sodium and increase their fluid simultaneously so that they build up more of a column of steam, so to speak, in their blood vessels.
Yeah.
And they, you know, so sodium actually can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Also, rarely, you know, sometimes, you know, I had a house guest and, you know, he went for a run against my advice in the middle of the day. It was about 85 degrees.
Oh,
and he
with
came
the
back
sun beating
and
down?
And he felt weak and woozy. And so I actually had some salt tablets that I saved from a triathlon, because athletes who go for hours and hours and hours at high temperatures, they have to take salt tablets. This is actually something that's done sometimes to military recruits on maneuvers, because you know, they put them through this ordeal of, like, you know, going through these swamps in Georgia or something. You know, it's like a macho kind of thing to get conditioned, you know, whatever, 30-mile hikes with full gear and weaponry, and they hell week, and they're young guys, and they just become dehydrated, and they lose a lot of sodium, so they take salt tablets. Ordinary people working out don't need salt tablets.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Because some people think, oh, wow, you know, I walked my dog around the block, and I was sweating, so I'm going to have, like, salt tablets. Or Gatorade, which has a fair amount of sodium in it.
Yeah,
you don't need that. Plus, a lot of junk, colorings, and sugar.
Yes,
you know, so you don't really need that.
Right.
That you need basically fluid replacement and a little bit of, you know, salt and electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
I find that after a really vigorous workout, I really like more salty food. I gravitate towards salt. But I let my own
craving dictate
it. Mm-hmm. And in addition, you know, one remedy that's been suggested for cramps is pickle juice. You know, and I get these big jars
brine.
I get big jars of pickles, unpasteurized.
I was just thinking dirty martini.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute. That's not going to work.
That's
not what you need after, like, a 50-mile bike ride.
No, that's just for happy hour.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we have time for one more question.
Okay. Thank you, Jessica, for your question. This question comes from Anne. Dr. Hoffman, I'm a 60-year-old woman, very active and full-time employment. Can minoxidil help with my thinning hair? Thank you.
Well, it's interesting, you know, she says, I'm very active in full-time employment.
She's 60, yeah.
She's 60.
Yeah.
So I'm going to comment a little bit on that. I'm not sure if I can draw any inferences from that, but there is an element of stress that can produce high cortisol, which is associated with hair loss.
Yes.
So that's actually one of the things that I might look for in an individual like this.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, when you're 60, your hair thins. And you could also have what's called androgenic alopecia, which is that after menopause, and, you know, after 50, women and men lose hair. And women get sometimes a little too much testosterone, and their estrogen drops after menopause, and they start to get hair receding.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can use things like salt palmetto. Actually, women who are past the age of menopause can safely use medication like Propecia, which has to be very carefully restricted if you're in an age where you can get pregnant, because pregnancy while you're on Propecia is a disaster.
Okay.
It's a version of the medication Proscar, which is used for men's prostates. But actually, salt palmetto works on men's prostates, and it also works on a little bit on hair, on prevention of hair recession.
Yeah.
But minoxidil is fine to use. Minoxidil
keeps the hair from falling out.
Yeah, once you stop, your hair falls out. Minoxidil is an interesting drug because it's a blood pressure
minoxidil,
drug.
Minoxidil, for people who don't know, is Rogaine, what you get over the counter at drugstores, Rogaine.
Minoxidil was developed as an antihypertensive drug. But unfortunately, it makes you hairy. That is not a good consequence of, like, all over hairy.
Mm-hmm. My blood pressure is good, but...
So what they discovered is that by applying it topically, it will make hair grow.
Wow.
Which is just an off-target effect. Could you dangerously lower your blood pressure by applying minoxidil to your scalp? I guess there's going to be some absorption, but probably not significant enough absorption for you to get side effects.
Mm.
And it works. It does work a bit.
Yeah.
But it a lot of people give up using it because it's expensive and it's not that effective.
Right. I would also urge Anne to have her iron levels and her ferritin especially checked. She's 60. She's likely not anemic if it's postmenopause.
Mm-hmm.
But if your ferritin is low, if it's, you know, below 40, below 30, that's another reason for hair
especially
shedding.
Especially in younger women, that's a cause of hair shedding.
Yeah. We normally don't see low ferritin in older women.
No,
it's,
not
it's
generally.
True. No.
So,
best of luck to you, Anne. And so yes, you can use minoxidil, says Dr. Hoffman.
So that's all the time we have for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine Podcast. But I just want to mention that we have a very fine a video cast available at drhoffman.com. And the theme of that is Taming Your Addiction to Food. And this is a collaboration that Layla and I did about a month ago. And now we posted it on the internet. It's available for review. You can get a 10-minute sampler. And if you like it, you can purchase the entire 90-minute broadcast, which is really a professional quality broadcast on the subject of taming your addiction to food. It's quite proud of it. It's available.
Yes.
And so please check it out. In addition, Layla herself is available for consultations. Some of you may be listening to this podcast from parts remote, too far to come to visit our offices in New York. Although we do get visitors and patients from all over the country and all over the world coming to the Hoffman Center. But if you want to undertake consultation with Layla via the phone, and you can transmit your previous medical records and share your history with her over the phone, she will weigh in with her usual expertise on your nutritional situation. That's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you very much, Layla.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.